Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. My remarks at the TPUSA Faith Pastors Summit. No advertisers in this episode. Become a member. If this show has impacted you in any way, our speeches, our broadcasts, our interviews, please consider becoming a member at charliekirk.com. You can listen to all the episodes advertiser-free at charliekirk.com. Membership levels for all income levels. It is affordable. Go to charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. That is charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Enjoy my remarks at the TPUSA Faith Pastor Summit. 1,300 pastors. You hear some questions from them. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Hello, everybody. Sorry to interrupt all the friendship building here, but please take a seat if you can. So I'm going to just speak for a few minutes here, and then we'll do question and answer, and then we'll continue. I hope you're all enjoying yourselves, and we are receiving very positive feedback. It's amazing to see what the Lord is doing here. This is our third pastor summit, and just to see the amount of people from across the country here is truly remarkable. A couple announcements. I do want to make sure it's clear that if you are not yet involved or receiving help or assistance from TPUSA Faith, we want to make sure that happens. And so I encourage you to get to know your rep. We have full-time staff across the country in your region, in every corner of the country, from North Dakota to Florida to Vermont. I think Mr. Callahan is here around here somewhere. Maybe not. I know Todd up there is preaching the word in Burlington, and we have reps all across the country. So you might say, well, Charlie, what can you offer? And you've seen some of this, from biblical citizenship classes to help forming community engagement teams to guest speakers. If there were speakers that you liked that you saw here, we help send these speakers on the road to bring them to your church to help do these types of events, because I bet many of you say, boy, I wish my congregation was hearing this. I wish my elder board was hearing this, right? And then if there is interest in any of the election stuff that's heading up next year, you're going to hear tomorrow from Turning Point Action, our 501c4 organization, on how you can register your congregation to vote, even get early voting stuff and early material there. So there's a ton of walkaway items here that we guys want you to leave with, and we'll make sure you're connected with your reps. Okay, I want to focus on one thing in particular here that has kind of been mentioned a couple times in a few speakers, and then we'll do some questions, which is Marxism. So we hear that term a lot, right? What does it exactly mean? So I encourage you as a pastor to make sure that your book budget is greater than your wardrobe budget. By the way, if it's not, you got a problem. I woke you up then now, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a second. A healthy church is led by a pastor that takes learning very, very seriously. And it says in the scriptures, in Philippians, whatsoever is true, whatsoever is beautiful, think on these things. And we have to know what we're up against. And I believe one of the reasons we were ill-prepared during the lockdowns, ill-prepared during the summer of 2020, is we kind of sort of had some understanding of what Marxism or communism was, but we didn't really understand the spiritual implications, how persuasive these ideas are and how they are the same failed demonic ideology that replicates itself time and time and time again. So I'm going to do my best to talk a little about Marxism. You're going to hear from who I believe is the leading scholar on Marxism, Dr. James Lindsay, later today. He is excellent. He's an unusual speaker in the sense that he's not a Christian. I know some of you send me some hate emails on that. Love you guys. We've moved him from atheist to agnostic. I'm working on it. And he is one of the sweetest people, and he's amazing, and he's coming to talk about Marxism. But I'm going to do my part on this. Okay, Karl Marx, in the mid-1800s, wrote a couple books that many of you may or may not be familiar with, Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital. Karl Marx also had some involvement in the occult. There's a whole great amount of literature there. But basically, Karl Marx took demonic ideology and ideas from the enemy that all that God created must be challenged and must be criticized. In fact, direct quote from Marxist writings, you must engage in the ruthless criticism of all that exists. Said simply, Marxists are trained, and this is what happens when you send kids to college, to deconstruct, to pick apart, to complain against anything that exists. And that includes the natural law and the natural order. Now, you're probably starting to connect some dots. Like, oh, well, that makes sense. That's why they're always trying to go after why, what is a man and what is a woman? Now, I believe that if the American church spoke more about the first 11 books of Genesis, we'd be in a much better place. I believe that there are eternal answers to so many of our problems in the first 11 books of Genesis that the modern cool kid, the skinny jean church, does not like talking about. They say, oh, it's allegorical. It's the word of God. It's the truth. Now, in the first 11 books of Genesis, the distinctions that our entire existence rely upon are set up. I mentioned this briefly yesterday. The distinctions between God and man, the distinctions between holy and profane, the distinctions between man and woman, the distinctions between good and evil, the distinctions between man and nature, the distinctions between God and nature. So let's focus on that one. Every ancient false pagan religion before Judaism, before the Torah, and eventually Christianity, God was in nature, not above nature. You worship the river, you worship the sun, you worship the mountain. This idea that God spoke nature into existence was unheard of in the ancient world. Now, these distinctions are important because that's where we get very basic morality. What the Marxists decided to do is they understood that these distinctions existed, and they said, we must destroy all distinctions. We must iron them out. Now, if you want to get really deep into it, they believe in smoothing out the contradictions so they can create a oneness of the world. Genesis 11, Nimrod wanted to create the city of Babel to create a one-world government. The aim of the Marxists is to get rid of any differences. Diversity is not the strength of the Marxists. Conformity and elimination of differences is the strength of the Marxists. You must understand, it's the exact opposite of what they tell you. And isn't this true? They don't want any dissenting opinion. They don't want any differences or any dialogue. Only uniformity, conformity. It's very totalitarian in nature. And so Karl Marx writes basically this idea that there are people in charge of society, and we'll call them the bourgeoisie. You know, one, two, three, go after the bourgeoisie is with a chant. That's not what they say on college campuses. They'll use swear words, right? And the rest of us are the proletariat, the everyday man, the worker. Now, he came after this mostly through economic lens, that this was people owning the factories and people working in the factories, and it's not fair. Now, this was basically him equipping the everyday rank and file with a playbook of how to criticize and how to attack any power structure. So fast forward, a obscure writer from prison in Italy, many of you know him, Antonio Gramsci, wrote this whole idea that we Marxists, we can't just have economic struggle, revolution against the factory owners, we need to have cultural struggle. That what Marx laid out was a rebellion not just against the rich, but a rebellion against anybody in power, including God himself. So what Antonio Gramsci wrote in the letters from prison was that we need to mobilize the masses to go against anybody in charge. So then another obscure thinker by the name of Herbert Marcuse, the Frankfurt School, takes this idea, comes to America, and comes up with what we now know as postmodernism. If you want to describe where wokeism is, what is the Wuhan Institute of Virology of wokeism? It came from Herbert Marcuse and the Frankfurt School in the 1950s and 60s. He wrote a book called One Dimensional Man, and he had colleagues of Michel Foucault and Jacques Derrida and disciples to this day by the name of Angela Davis and also Paulo Freire and James Lindsay wrote a whole book called The Marxification of Education. Here's where it comes to your faith, and this is what drives me nuts when pastors say, Charlie, I don't do politics. Satan is using Marxism as a way to deconstruct God's natural order. Every single day. So some pastors and some churches say, but I don't like talking about these issues. The most fundamental and easiest example that we can give is another distinction. The distinction between a parent and a child. They do not believe in such distinctions. In Washington, at the age of 12, when you go in for a doctor's visit, the parent is not allowed into the doctor's visit unless the child requests the parent to come in. They don't believe that there's any distinction between a parent or a child. In fact, they believe it to be an oppressive, tyrannical type relationship. So if you are to equip an entire generation, an entire culture, to ruthlessly criticize all that exists, well then, what comes next? San Francisco comes next. There is no next. You know what the only thing is? Is all outright totalitarianism and tyranny. This is one of the great lies of Marxism, is that they act as if, you know, eventually they'll get rid of all the contradictions. And I'll summarize this in a way that you'll be able to use with your congregations. But it will always end in tyranny. We have a unique moment when America was founded where the many were able to be in charge of the few. Marxism wants the few to actually be in charge of the many under the guise of the many being in charge of the few. So Marxism must abolish three things. And this is a spiritual war, and I'll prove one, two, and three. Number one, Marxism must destroy religion. It must. In fact, Karl Marx called religion the opiate of the masses. Number two, Marxism must destroy private property. Incredibly important. Do you know the first ever recorded real estate purchase in the history of the world was Abram buying Hebron? Private property is biblical. The idea of owning property comes directly from the Bible. The idea of the tribe or the commune owning everything, that idea has been around for a long time. But the idea that you are a steward of a piece of property, a steward of a certain thing to pass down to future generations, to tithe and offer, these are biblical principles. Marxism wants to destroy and abolish that. And then finally, because Marx said this is the ultimate totalitarian environment, is the family. And repeatedly we see, and I believe I mentioned this yesterday, I give so many speeches I can't remember everything I mentioned. But yesterday I said, in the Ten Commandments, the only one of the Ten Commandments that mentions your nation of promise, honor your mother and father so that you may live long in the land to which you are in. So you're all pastors, so I'm going to get a little geeky with the Hebrew for you, okay? So the word honor is the same word as heavy in the scriptures. The same word to treat heavily. The word curse in Hebrew is the same word as to treat lightly. So if you were to treat your parents lightly, you are to curse your parents. What is the last part of the Old Testament in the book of Malachi? Talking about cursing your land. The last thing before Matthew begins, he's talking about cursing your land. What do we learn from Mao's China? What did we learn from Stalin's Russia? If they can destroy the bond between a parent and a child, that is the simplest, most proven way for totalitarian government to come in. And I'm telling you right now, you as pastors have a historic and biblical mandate to protect parental authority in America today. Never before have we seen the family so under attack from so many directions. And I will say, what other pastors are afraid to say. They're trying to turn your kids gay and trans and groom them away from Christianity. And some people say, well, you know, Charlie, that goes too far. Read their literature. Read their books. They talk about how they must go after children because they cannot reproduce, so they must recruit. And if there is not an issue that could unite the American church, I mean, what's happening right now in Chino Valley, and the great Jack Hibbs is fighting this, and in Temecula, oh my goodness, just a couple examples where the Attorney General of California is coming in and suing Chino Valley. You know why? Because Chino Valley, right down the street from here, the school board, which thankfully because of Jack Hibbs and the Chino Hills Calvary Chapel Church, they took over that school board. They have the radical idea, everybody, radical, that if a child wants to transition, the parent gets a phone call. They're being investigated by the California Attorney General and sued for such a thing. Just for that. And for the uninitiated, the non-Christian audience, they're confused by this. Guess what? You don't get to be confused. You know exactly what's going on here. This is just another manifestation of the invisible war. Because if you can go after the children and destroy that bond, the family is the last line of defense of a free society. It's the only line of defense. It's the ultimate line of defense. And the church must stand up for this and for parental rights. So when we talk about, you know, if some people say, well, Charlie, I'm not comfortable being political. I think you could give a sermon on Marxism without ever actually being political. It is a dominant ideology in the world today. And by the way, for those of you that are worried about losing your 501c3 status, you're allowed to talk about ideas and ideology and philosophy. And let me just talk about that for a second. I hear that excuse all the time. All the time. Hilariously, I hear it from excuses who think Jesus is coming next Thursday. And so I say, the IRS wouldn't get back to you for another 18 months, man. So it's like, you're telling me Jesus is coming soon, and you're worried you're going to lose the 501c3 status. One of those things you don't believe. See, I'm not a pastor, so I can say these things. So, God and man, holy and profane, man and woman. So I got asked a great question. We just had a wonderful roundtable, and one of the pastors asked me, Charlie, what is the issue that we should go all in on? And I've been doing this for 11 years. There is one issue that I think we can win on, one issue that is such a flagrant, such an awful, such a clear, insult to God's design that's going after children and our culture, and it is the pagan state-run religion of transgenderism. And I gave the speech at Awaken Church. I see Sam here, and I talked about the fake religions, the fake pagan religions that are running America. And there's the earth worshipers, there's the religion of tolerance, there's the religion of being nice, and the one that is, honestly, there's the fake religion of cult of scientism. We could talk about all this if you want. But the one that really gets me is this gender delusion religion. You have on the White House two major trans flags and one American flag. You have an individual who suffers under the transgender lifestyle, and she takes off their clothes as a stripper at the White House. I mean, the Center for Disease Control, as I mentioned yesterday, says that men who take lactating drugs can chest feed. This is in our textbooks, it's in our curriculum, and it is because of a silent church. If the church was forceful and if the church was being salt and light, this thing would never have been able to get out of the gate, okay? But that didn't happen. It is here. So let me give you a couple pointers on how to handle this issue. There are zero genders and there are two sexes. You might say, well, Charlie, I've never heard of that before. Gender is a fake made-up word. It's a new age term. As soon as we admit that gender is a thing, we have lost the debate. There is sex and that is it. When they introduced gender, they said, well, it's a social construct. It's like your horoscope. And then we all of a sudden played into their hands. Do you notice they used to call it transsexual and now they call it transgender? Just like that, we allowed these guys to take over our language. So again, there are zero genders and there are two sexes. So if you see somebody in your church or they come to you or they say, but Charlie, you know, this is my 22-year-old and, you know, he was the captain of the high school team that I sent him to Berkeley and now she is not what he used to be, wears a dress and all that. Their truth, that person is wearing a costume of womanhood. No different than a white person wearing blackface. You do not become the other race just because you wear a costume of the other race. You do not become a different thing just because you start dressing like the other thing. And if we even play into this an inch as Christians, we are surrendering that territory to the enemy. Even an inch. Now somebody might say, but Charlie, shouldn't we love on these people? Yes. The best way to love them is to shock them with the truth and to tell them what everybody else is afraid to tell them, is to say that you are not a man or you are not a woman. So stop dressing and acting like one. You've obviously been traumatized. You've obviously been hurt. We'll find you help to be able to talk about that and deal with that. But I refuse as a pastor, I refuse as a head of a church to be able to sign off and sit idly by while you want my blessing for you to go take Lupron, which is irreversible damage that will make you on a path and a cascade of interventions that you'll never be able to reverse. Do you know what we're actually learning from some of these detransitioners? By the way, there's over 30 to 40,000 detransitioners now in America. And that list is growing. Just so we're clear, because of the silence of the church, remember, silence itself is evil. Silence is consent. 10 years from now, there will be 250,000 young people regretting, saying, where was my pastor warning me about this? Where was the local guy warning me about this? And they will be without breasts, with hysterectomies, unable to have children, unable to be able to get into meaningful relationships. That number is increasing like you wouldn't believe. There used to be 2 gender-affirming care clinics in the West. There are now hundreds. Hundreds. The pharmaceutical companies look at your children and the children of your church as nothing more than places to make money, to chop off their private parts, administer them irreversible pharmacological agents that we don't even use for rapists anymore, to then put them on a series of antidepressants because then they're an annuity for the rest of their life. For one trans surgery, a pharmaceutical company will make $1 million a decade. We're talking about 250,000 of them that we know of coming in the next couple of years. But what we're learning from these detransitioners, one in particular, New Hampshire, a young lady, she comes up and she says, and this video has gone viral, and I'm going to do my best to paraphrase it. She says, I was a young girl, and my parents got divorced, and I started to see videos, and I thought I was trans. And everyone around me was afraid to offend me, so they affirmed me. And they told me I am who I am. It's my truth. Be true to who you are. And not a single person told me that I might be dealing with something else other than go get a hysterectomy. Go to Boston's Children and get irreversible surgery. And she said, here I am now at 26. I can never have kids. I missed puberty because I took puberty blockers. And she said, affirmation ruined my life. You as pastors have a moral and biblical obligation to not affirm evil. Almost every single distinction that we see that has been clearly set up in the Bible, the trans agenda goes after. And the other one is that there is a fear by some churches and some pastors that there's going to be this massive walkout campaign of their church. And I got to be honest, guys. I say offensive things for a living. It's pretty great. There are worse things than having somebody just walk out of your church. Revelation 21:8, the first people in the lake of fire, guys, are the cowards. I'm not saying that's any of you. I'm not even saying that's people you know. But don't allow, one of my favorite pastors says, Charlie, I'm doing everything I can to preach it down to a manageable size. And they just keep on coming. And it's actually a paradox. The more you speak the truth, the more the people are going to come in a broken culture. But honestly, let's say that you have a church of 600 and it goes down to 400. Well, then maybe you have a healthier fighting force and a remnant. Maybe that. And if I may editorialize for a second, be careful. This is completely off script. Don't grow your church too fast and borrow too much money. I've seen more churches go in the woke, neutral direction and use the excuse that I have to pay the mortgage. I believe, and look, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I saw the Willow Creekification of the American church, okay? And I think Bill Hybels was a very gifted Bible teacher. It's too bad, that whole thing. And so I passively went to that church, and I saw the whole thing. And they came up with the model, pay down as little as you can, borrow as much money. And I'm not saying don't borrow money, guys. I'm not telling you how to run your church. What I'm saying, though, is that there is a theme between some of the weak churches in America. And it's because they're very worried that if they lose 5% of the people coming to their church, they're not going to be able to pay the bank. They're not going to be able to pay the note. So pray on that. Maybe if just one of you hear that message, then it's worth saying. So I'll say one more thing and then we'll do some questions. I want to just thank you guys for your attention throughout these last couple of days, and I hope it's been blessing you. So we're going to put a slide up here. I'm going to tell you kind of the story here. So it's been a very eventful year at Turning Point USA. This is our third pastor summit. We ran out of space in Nashville. We ran out of space when we did this last year in Coronado. And honestly, we were debating, like, do we do another one? And the first two were completely underwritten by a couple donors of ours. We said, honestly, let's try to get as much sponsors as we can. And all of a sudden, we look around. The response was unbelievable. So we decided to do it. And, you know, these events are expensive to put on. I'm not asking you for money. If you're able to chip in anything at all, pray about it. It would help us a lot because, you know, these events run $700,000, $800,000. So it's about $800 a person. If you're not in a position to do that, totally get it. I'm not even saying trying to guilt you into it, but if you're in a place or your church is able to do it, great. If not, then that's fine too. So if you're able to chip in anything at all, we would greatly appreciate it. But we decided to go into our general funds that we have for a rainy day fund because I said nothing is more important than what we're doing than assembling pastors and strengthening the church. And I'm glad we did, by the way. One of the most important things we did. So think about it, pray about it, and we'll end that there. Okay, let's do some questions, guys. And if you want, you can follow the QR code on the screen or talk to any of our staff, and please pray about that. It would help us out a lot and save us some time and energy. Okay, let's get to some questions. Hi, Barry. We'll get to some questions. You can line up here or raise your hands, and we'll find you. So anybody? Who wants to go first? All the way over there?
I can run.
You can run? Good job, man.
Hey, Charlie, currently about 68% of the churches in America have average attendance under 100, around 30-35% under 50. Do you have any specific guidelines for pastors of smaller churches? How can we make an impact in our community when we don't have 500, 5,000 people to work with?
Well, first of all, you know, the small church gives me hope. That I actually find sometimes the smaller the church, the more the conviction. And so don't think of yourself as small impact just because your numbers are not 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. My advice would be exactly the same if it was a big church, which is preach the word, be strong and courageous, talk about the current events through a biblical lens and a biblical view. And then if you're looking for wider impact, try to build a coalition of churches in your local area of 5 or 6 or 7 that you kind of all work together. But I'm actually encouraged by the smaller local church. There is actually a movement in America by some to try to almost downsize because they want more of a familiar local church. And it's not a perfect rule of thumb. I mean, one of the most courageous, strong churches in the country is Awaken in San Diego, and they have like 12,000 people, right? Is that Leanne? Hi, Leanne. And so it's not, there's no like standard rule or form for it. But I wouldn't be discouraged. God has a calling on your life to shepherd those people. And take that with even more heaviness and seriousness. And honestly, I think some pastors that might be in charge of a 3,000 person church, they might say, boy, I wish I only had 100. And you might say, boy, I wish I could hide and have 3,000. So you both can share notes and wish you were each other. So, thank you. You guys can line up for questions if you want, or we'll come to you, whatever's easiest. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hi, Charlie. My question is, so when I look at our state capitals, we have thousands of people showing up for worship events and things like that. But I feel like it would be super effective if they were showing up at the assembly, state assembly floors, to be in opposition of some of these bills that aren't working, as well as getting back out into streets and doing evangelism. And I just keep thinking, if we had these thousands moving out from the Capitol, just doing worship services and actually moving into these places where by the thousands they were taking over some of these assembly floors, that could be so effective. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, we got to follow the laws, right? Because, I mean, I just had on my podcast today a young man by the name of Owen Schroyer, who's going to federal prison for 60 days because he didn't go in the Capitol, but he gave a speech that the FBI didn't like and the Department of Justice didn't like. That does remind me of one thing. I will answer your question, but let me just mention one thing in a second. If you are not speaking out or preaching out against what the Department of Justice is doing against everyday Americans, please start doing that. It is against God's design of justice what the Department of Justice is doing in this country right now. So, please. But, yeah, we got to be careful and be, you know, legal and everything in that, whatever we do. And so if it's legal to, you know, peacefully assemble in the state capitals, then so be it. Absolutely. But we as the church should be mobilizing more and more to have our voice be heard in these state capitals for sure. Thank you. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Oh, we have the other side? Yeah, great.
So we have these kind of two, these two big dividing fault line issues between Trump in 2016 and probably COVID that kind of separated out the church, right? She kind of showed a difference between kind of where Big Eva was headed and maybe where just the populace in the church was. Looks like we're shaping up again for Trump, Biden coming up here this next year. And how do you see that shaking on the church? And do you have any advice for pastors as they're trying to navigate? They have people in their church that are kind of on both sides. One wants to go, you know, full Christian nationalism, and one wants to go kind of make peace with the world and be winsome and make friendship with the world. So any advice? I mean, I know that's kind of a big topic, but.
Yeah, it's good. I have a lot of opinions, so it's a good question. I'll speak on behalf of Turning Point Action, which really focuses on this, and you're going to hear from that tomorrow. Look, let me just speak on the election right now, and also speak some of my personal thoughts on this. From January 1st to today, there have been about four or five failed predictions by the central planners of our elections. They thought Donald Trump would be in a very close Republican primary. That's not the case. They thought that Joe Biden was going to be somewhat popular by Labor Day. That's not the case. They thought, at least not where he is now. They thought that the third-party candidates would be calmed down. Not true. You have RFK, Cornel West, and No Labels bubbling up. They thought that the spring and summer of lawfare against Donald Trump was going to hurt him and almost create a wounded animal situation where he's in a corner and doesn't really act, you know, his best. He's actually honestly running a better campaign than anything I saw in 2020, I think, right now. I think he's actually, in a very interesting way, it's actually helping him. And so you very well might see in the last 24 hours, I've seen more evidence than I have in the last, honestly, year that there might be a plug-and-place campaign to remove Joe Biden as the nominee. So Donald Trump is almost certainly going to be the nominee, right? And he totally has my support, 100%. And so, yeah, look, there are some fault lines here. And I would love to debate any of these people. They tend not to want to ever talk to us. I mean, Ed Stetzer or what's the guy from Andy Stanley, whatever. And I would just ask them a couple questions. Number one, why will you not support a candidate? Why would, forget the candidate, the issues. Is the church essential? Did God create man and woman? When does life begin? Let's just start with those three issues. And if you're not going to vote on those three issues because you want to be winsome and win over the world, I'm not really sure you should be a pastor, to be perfectly honest, at that point. And so, yeah, I mean, look, the fault lines are there. We're going to hear every possible, you know, one-liner where they say, you know, Donald Trump is the worst person ever, and because of that, you know, we're not supporting him. I find those arguments to be unbelievably weak now that we know that also as president, I mean, we would not have had the reversal of Roe versus Wade if it wasn't for him, with Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch We would not have had the embassy move to Jerusalem. Having a border also is a nice thing. So not to mention President Trump's been really great on the trans issue. So, and I'll be honest, I think we're in the midst of a 110-year war against the constitutional project of having an unelected fourth branch of government call the shots that can remove presidents at will that have deteriorated the sovereignty of the American people. This is a failed progressive project that is now really hitting a crescendo point. And the reason they go after him as hard as they're going after him is not because of his tweets or his tone or even January 6th. It's because of the promises he's making against the deep state. That's why they're going after him as hard as he is. So thank you for your question. I appreciate it. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Charlie. I have to tell you, as a lifelong Californian, it's awesome to be in a room full of pro-life people. Like, what a change. And just, you know, given that there are, like, millions of women in this country who face unplanned pregnancy every year, besides just saying no to abortion, if they want to choose life but they're not ready to parent, it seems like it would be fabulous to have more of us advocating for adoption. To have them choose adoption.
Yeah, I agree. And Preborn is here. I do a lot of work with Preborn. They do a great job on our show, and they do a lot with that. Look, I'll be very honest, though. I think the church can do a lot better job of teaching purity culture. This is not my line of work in that sense, but I'm totally disappointed how many young Christians are involved in sexually degenerate culture just as much as the secular world is. It blows me away, actually. And I'll be honest, it's because the church doesn't talk about sin enough. If your whole church is just focused on, you know, on conversion, which is important, and not talking about sin. And yeah, look, you know, I got married relatively young. And there, when the celebration of marriage at healthy churches happens a lot, but you'll talk to a lot of Christian parents. They say, oh, just wait till your late 20s, you know, wait till your early 30s. So you talk about this issue of unplanned pregnancies, you know, which is important. If they were raped, it was unplanned. They planned it. They made a decision to get pregnant. But no one wants to tell them, you have to take responsibility for your orgasms. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for the conference. I just wanted to get your perspective on the new phenomena of UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. And not necessarily from, like, the world's perspective, but I think, do you think that we are dealing with spiritual warfare at this point?
I really don't know, and I don't. I haven't actually thought that much about it. So here was my initial, any pastor can come up. I would love to hear what Lance Walma has to say or Jack Kibbs has to say. I know it's funny. I could not have cared less about the alien hearing. I don't know why. I had, like, zero interest where my kind of, like, deep state antennas went off, and I was like, the true conspiracy theorists think that they're now lying to us about the aliens being real because they're actually not real because they're trying to distract from... Actually, yeah, I'm actually kind of sympathetic to that, honestly. Maybe it's spiritual warfare. Maybe it's technology the government hasn't revealed to us. I don't know. I know that some pastors have some strong opinions on that. Here's what I think. I don't trust the government. And so when the government is, like, rolling out... Like, yeah, you're the same government that said the vaccine is safe and effective and masks work... So I'm back to believing in no aliens now. Thank you.
That's a good one. Hey, Charlie. How you doing today? My name is Jesus Marquez. I'm from Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada. So, yes, one of the big battleground states. So we form an organization called the American Christian Caucus, me and two other pastors, to organize and mobilize churches in Nevada to go out and do the action part. We're actually working with TP Fade on the educational part. And what we want to do is we believe that you mentioned small churches, between 200 and 2,000 member churches, I believe those are going to be the ones that are going to save America, especially coming from Nevada, battleground state. So the question is, can we work together in the action part? I know I talked to Connor. I just wanted to mention that to you. We can do things together to organize and mobilize churches to do ballot harvesting and voter contact in our state.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a lot about that tomorrow. And you reminded me of something I said at a speech previously. I should have said it earlier to the gentleman that spoke earlier. I actually am going to reject this idea of small church, big church. There's strong church, weak church. I think that's the divide we need to actually have in America, right? You like that, Jurgen? You can use that one. Yeah. So, yes, 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 we'd love to help you. Your church should be actively involved. We're legal harvesting ballots. We're legal chasing ballots. Every single one of your congregants should be registered to vote. And then you should have, as part of a ministry team, going through the list, has Sally Sue Marie voted? Call her up. Hey, how you doing? You know, great. Okay, you're coming to Christmas? Yeah. I'd love to have good tickets. Well, have you voted? You know, and then just talk to them. Like, okay, I'll get my ballot in, right? Okay, great. Thanks.
Hey, Charlie. Thanks again. My question is, I'm a young dad. I'm a business owner. I am I'm a church planter. And how can we help, especially young people, have a positive view of the future and what we're doing? Because it seems like as conservatives, as Christians, it's always reactionary to everything else that's going on rather than like what you were just speaking about, going back to Scripture and how it defines these things, how it creates the reality and the renewed reality. And how can we offer a positive vision of the future and said, well, it's not really my problem because we're going to be raptured out of here anytime, and rather than a righteous man lays up an inheritance for his children's children?
It's such an important question. This is why I think our summits are, if it's the Lord's plan, are going to keep growing. The soil has never been more fertile for a revival. You're dealing with the most depressed generation, anxious generation, suicidal generation, alcohol-addicted, drug-addicted generation. We have 110,000 people drug overdosing on fentanyl every single year, right? And there's a lot of reasons for this. So one of the things that, you know, we talk about at TPSA Faith, and many of you do, super simple, right? How do you give people a vision of the future? People that are pessimistic about the future tend to not be married and have kids. Tend to be. And this is, just understand this. It's not always the case, right? But it's largely the case. The nastiest parts of American politics are largely driven by 33-year-old women who graduated from Berkeley and they have cats. And not kids. I'm not really a cat person, by the way, just to be honest. So. But we as a church movement, I think, can do a lot better telling young ladies in particular, you don't have to go become some partner at a law firm. It's okay to get married and have children. In fact, it's great. Not just okay. We have this cohort. You see it in the data. I'm not making this up. Of some of the angriest, most resentful people in America are 34-year-old young ladies, and they say, well, all the good ones have gone. And I lovingly ask, what were you doing at 23? I was trying to make partner, I was going to grad school and all this. I was like, yeah, I mean, you got really bad advice, honestly. And, you know, then they have to find some outlet. You know what the outlet they find? Climate change, leftism, Marxism, anti-racism, transgenderism. All the isms of the pagan world fill the void when you do not do the basic thing that God commands us to do, which is to get married and have children. And then I'll go on the other side. And then, you know, a lot of the young ladies say, but Charlie, you know, all the men are like women, the women are like men. I was going to say something, I didn't say it. We run a men's summit at TPUSA, and I encourage you to send your men to our men's summit. It's life-changing. It's incredible. It's unlike any other men's summit. It's out in the woods. We don't feed you anything. It's really great. So you know, we turn boys into men. We break your will, and it's really something. But I would encourage you as a church to focus on building up your boys into men and emphasizing that and celebrating masculinity and talking about the need for strong men. I actually think that can start to solve a lot of your problems. You start to engage in escapism when you haven't done the basic things that Christ and our Lord has commanded us to do. Thank you. Next, we'll take a couple more. Yeah.
God bless you, Charlie. I am Bishop Leon Benjamin, New Life Harvest Church in Virginia, also the Real Remnant Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's such a blessing to be here, and thank you for this summit. I have a question. Out of the book of Revelation 13:16, it says, "And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads." And we're dealing with this spirit of Antichrist. We know that he may be here or may not be here, but what do you perceive right now of what they're trying to cause us to do against our will, to either go in our head or in our hand, to stop us from communicating, commerce, making money? What is that Antichrist spirit right now? Can you define it or perceive it?
Yeah, at the end of the question, you isolated what I was going to say. I don't know if the person of the Antichrist is here. The spirit of the Antichrist is absolutely here. I'm not going to, I don't know the all the theological implications of the mark of the beast. You guys can debate that amongst yourselves, okay? And some people say, oh, you know, the vaccine was or it wasn't, or all the, I have no position on that whatsoever. Not my line of thinking. Here's what the Antichrist would want. They do want to create a one world government. Submission of free society, and the suffocation of any sort of idea of liberty, which is God's idea, not man's idea. And I got in a debate the other day, and they said, but, you know, Charlie, that's a tough fight. And they said, of course it's a difficult fight. And we have to occupy till Christ comes, because we know how the story ends. And so I'll be very honest. I don't know if it is part of the end times or not, but I am not getting anything drilled into my head called Neuralink. I'm not doing any of that. And I don't care what they do. I'm not taking any boosters. I didn't take the vaccine shot. And I will say this. And if you took the shot, I'm not here to, you know, make you feel bad. I hope it works out for you. And I mean that. So, because the data is not good. But I hope it's all good. So, but there, this should give you some hope. Despite the fear-mongering and the smearing and the slandering and the misrepresentation and the threatening, you can't be in the military, you can't work for this company, you can't go to college, 35 million people still resisted taking the vaccine. That's a really promising data point. In fact, the oligarchs thought it would be maybe 1 or 2 million, not 35 million. So I have no idea if that plays into the mark of the beast or not. You'll have to ask Lance Wallnau about that. Thank you.
What's up, Charlie? How you doing? I'm wondering if you could help me with this, right? I've been struggling with this. How do you feel about people leaving blue states, running to red states, all right? And I ask you this because I'm a New York City fireman. My wife left her job in retail. We started a homeschooling community. We do a Christian-based Montessori program. We started with 7 kids about a year and a half ago. We're up to 93 right now. And yeah, we're looking to just really expand and take this to the next level. But my question is that how do I fight this machine, especially in New York? Because we were thinking about going to South Carolina, opening up one in Texas, but the fight's there. But you really can't win there. So your thoughts?
Boy, this is my opinions change on this topic because I'm a total hypocrite. I left Illinois for Arizona, right? So I'll just be very honest, right? So I'm not exactly one that could say, stay and fight. Anyone from Illinois? I'm lost cause. I'm sorry. It's that one's not. I have actually more faith for California than I do for Illinois. And that is not, I'm sorry. I'm just being honest. I got to tell how it is. So, so I live in Arizona. And here's what I will say. I ran into somebody, I was in Lubbock, Texas last weekend speaking at an amazing church, and someone came up to us, and they're donors to our organization. They said, Charlie, we left to Scottsdale here for Lubbock. And I said, why? And they said, oh, you know, Arizona's turning. We want to get ahead of the curve. I said, boy, you're leaving Arizona for Texas? I mean, you're way, you know, you're a little preemptive here, right? And at some point, you have to just say, we're going to keep our roots down, and we're going to fight. But you have to. This is important. While you still have some glimpse of freedom, you must articulate what the line is. Because it is irrational and against the reason, which is a gift from the Lord, to say we'll stay no matter what. That is not smart or wise. It just isn't, right? because think of it in Nazi Germany. I'm going to stay no matter what. Like that's, and that could happen here. Good, right? Of course it could. And so, I mean, when they start having gulags, I mean, I don't know, right? Whatever those lines might be, I know this, that if New York or California were to try the non-essential church thing and really jailing pastors, you know, that's a question. But at the same time, I'm encouraged by how much fight there is still left in people here in California. And I'm using California, not as New York. If I may speak personally and politically for a second, I'm glad that people didn't totally leave New York. Because the House of Representatives would not be under Republican control if it wasn't for California or New York. So you have to pray about it. And it all is based on your mission call. If your call is to be in a place of darkness and be salt and light, you're in the right spot. But if everybody left California, I think that would be, I'm honestly now of the opinion that it's probably a bad idea for everybody to leave. I'm probably of that opinion now. But you have to know that it's going to be a nonstop battle. It's going to be a long crusade and a long fight, but we believe in a God of awesome miracles. We do. Thank you. All right, we'll do a couple more. Yeah.
So I keep listening and hearing all of the things that our kids are facing and all of the remedies that we have and taking over school boards, which I think is amazing and awesome and wonderful. But I like to personally go to the root of the problem, which I have believed for a long time, is that we give our children to someone else to raise. And I know that it's been kind of briefly touched on, but in my experience in the church, that's a touchy subject that everyone tries to avoid. So what would you say to that?
Yeah, and so this is one of the reasons why we launched Turning Point Academy. If you guys are interested, please go to the Turning Point Academy booth. We are starting church hybrid schools across the country and giving you the resources and the material, and the Turning Point Academy team is doing an amazing job. In fact, we have one in Barrington, Illinois, that is just amazing. Our good program in Illinois here, it's like the last stand. But yeah, you should take a look at that. But look, the question of the modern day is, are you actually a parent? Do you have a follow-up for that? Or
how about homeschooling? Like, yes. Mothers actually educating their own children, knowing that it is hard and we have to deny self and seek the Lord, but not even doing that, like us taking the responsibility for our children ourselves.
We're going to do homeschooling as long as we can handle it, you know, with our daughter, so pray for us. But look, I also understand homeschooling is not realistic for everybody. And so that's why we're trying to do the hybrid thing where you send your kids to one day of in-person instruction and you homeschool for 4 days. We have seen a massive increase in homeschooling in America and near tripling or quadrupling. If you haven't already, you're going to hear from Classical Conversations at some point. I know they're on the agenda somewhere. But here's my encouragement. You might say, Charlie, what are the action items as a church? On a weekly basis, you need to be reminding in the bulletin and the announcements options and opportunity for alternative education for your congregation. Rescue missions from government schools is what I'm saying. We're going to make it easier to homeschool. Here's a local private school. Here's a local charter school. Here's a vetted homeschool group, right? So you as the church need to be the ecclesia, the public square. Christ said, on this rock, build my ecclesia, where you're going up and say, okay, before I get into the message of, you know, in John, let me remind you that we're having an information night on Tuesday of the 5 best places to send your kid to school in the 20-mile radius, and we're vetting them, and these places are great, and they're private school, charter school, homeschool co-ops. You will be flooded with parent interest. And if you go a step further and you say it's your biblical obligation to engage in that. So, but yes, homeschooling is absolutely the ideal. So, thank you. We'll go here, and we'll close. Yeah. From Awaken.
Yeah, good to have you back here in San Diego, Charlie. It was great to see you in Nashville. I had a question because I know from your record of watching you, you're very pro-Israel, and that's one of the reasons I feel like I can trust you as a young mouthpiece here in America. But you mentioned Jerusalem being moved by Trump to become the embassy, and the kind of moral courage that it took to do that after all these promises from these other presidents, Charlie, how do you see America and Israel as God orchestrates that end time and our role in aiding Israel?
Yeah, so I'm not going to speak as much to the end times. You know, Jack Hibbs does a much better job of that. But I will say this, an argument that we don't make in defense of Israel enough And, you know, I was talking to an anti-Israel guy who's a conservative. He's not anti-Israel. He just says, oh, Charlie, Israel doesn't matter. And I say, that's not a fringe belief, by the way. That's growing. I'd say it's about 50-50 right now in the conservative movement. I'm telling you, I know the audience very, very well, okay? Maybe not in your congregation, but it's a real thing. And I'll say, okay, are you a Christian? They say, yeah, of course I am. I say, how do you know the Bible is true? Well, it's because of the Word of God. I said, yeah, okay, yeah, I know that, but doesn't it help to be able to go to Jesus' hometown of Capernaum, to go see Hebron of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Sarah, Rebecca, and Leah, to go see the birthplace of Christ, to go see the excavation project of the city of David, to be able to go to the Sea of Galilee, the mouth of the Jordan River? Did you know there's never been a single archaeological excavation discovery that has contradicted the truth of the Bible? It only confirms the truth of the Bible. For that alone, we must make sure Israel is accessible. We can visit it because it confirms on a daily basis the truth of the Word of God. Final question.
Okay, sorry. Hi, Charlie. Bianca Gracia here, and I have Pastor with me, Pastor Cabrera from the Valley. So I work with Hispanic evangelicals, and one of the things that I have, everybody's always coming up to me saying, what can we do to outreach the Hispanic evangelicals? Well, number one, we self-segregate, and our Hispanic evangelicals, I have urged them to get involved in the political process. So one thing here, because you have all these pastors, I tell people all the time, you have to learn how to fight using their own laws and processes. And I told the Hispanic evangelicals that they would be very powerful in Texas. We have 254 counties. If we had one pastor of every county involved in their Republican Party, you would write the resolutions and end all of this mess in the laws that they're trying to pass in every single state. So that's one thing that I have to say. I'm going
to
let
him get to the question. I'm sorry.
I'm going to let him ask the question. But we need resources, Charlie. In Spanish, of what you're doing here to get out to the Hispanic evangelical.
That's great feedback. Thank you.
Yes, we'll exactly that. I think the Hispanic church is a powerful weapon yet to be used. And we're everywhere. We're about to be the majority. And so my question to you, Charlie, is this. Do you have any plans to do summits for the Latino pastors in Spanish?
If we can raise the money for it, then yes, we have a long list. But yeah, I mean, it's a great idea, and you know, we have a lot of stuff that we're doing in Phoenix. I will say this, that I'm very hopeful about the Black church and the Hispanic church. This transgender issue is allowing us to reach communities that I never would have thought possible in a very powerful way. And I'm willing to speak in front of any congregation anytime. So if anyone has a Hispanic church and you want to have me come speak, I think that would be a lot of fun and be able to do that. My Spanish is no bueno. It's not very good, so not good. All right, in closing, everybody, I want to thank you for your attentiveness and for all of your prayers for me personally and for TPUSA. Please continue to cover us in prayer if you so feel led to do that. We're under constant attack. I can't even tell you all the attacks. It's fun at times. And so we appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
The United States Constitution guarantees every American fundamental rights and protection of life, liberty, and property. Salem is celebrating our founding document with a special offer, a 1953 Oman U.S. Constitution lithograph. Understand the value of these lithographs is to know the story. A master lithographer, immigrant named Theodore Oman, came to this country to find the American dream. 70 years ago in 1953, Oman printed a limited number of these exceptional Constitution lithographs. Go to SalemEventStore.com to read Oman's entire story. America's most important document stands as a testament to all Americans to maintain their liberties, freedoms, and inalienable rights. Buy it and display it proudly. Buy a gift for your family and friends, for all the teachers in your communities. There's a limited number, so act today. Go to SalemEventStore.com to get your exclusive 1953 Oman U.S. Constitution lithograph. Buy it and display it proudly. While limited supplies last, there's a limited time, so act today. SalemEventStore.com, SalemEventStore.com.